Okay, I call this meeting of the Blaine City Council to order, May 29th, 6 p.m. May we have a moment of silence, please? Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have roll call, please?
Eric Davidson.
Here.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Steve Lorenzen.
Here.
Bonnie Onman.
Here.
Alicia Rule.
Here.
And Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Meg Olson requested to be excused.
So moved.
Second, been moved by Councilor Hawkins and seconded by Councilor Stewart to excuse Meg Olson. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried, 6-0. Okay, next thing on the agenda is our fire chief's report, which he has handed out. Hello, Chief.
Evening, Council. So I'm sharing with you our chief's report from our last commissioner meeting. Just point out a couple of quick things for you. We had 1,282 calls for the year, which is about 20 more than where we were at this time last year. And then our peak season will start just about the time school gets out, because as you know, the population in Birch Bay has a tendency to rise right about the time school gets out. Blaine and semi-AMU calls were right about where they should be. Semi-AMU was at 9 for last month. We seemed to run between 9 and 12. And then the remodel of semi-AMU station's coming along. We just, everything's done except one little item on the stove, and then we'll be ready to have some sleepers sleeping out there, some sleeping volunteers, and then we're looking at a resident program still as soon as the SRA moves out. So, which may not be by July 11th now. Might be a day or two longer than that. So we're working with them. So okay. With that, unless you have any questions.
No questions? Okay. Good. Thanks, Chief. Okay. We have some written communications.
Yes, we have an email dated May 19th, 2018 from John Murak regarding the tsunami evacuation map. Email dated May 20th, 2018 from John Murak again regarding traffic issues and speed limits. And we have a letter dated May 21st, 2018 from Greg Wendt regarding Police Patrol of Semiama Resort.
Okay. And I assume we're going to be following up with these individuals, the appropriate follow-up?
Yes.
City Manager? Okay. We don't have this on the agenda, but I see there are two people that would like to speak before council. So the first person on the list is Jim Zell. Can you state your name and address, Jim, for the record?
Okay. Jim Zell. I'm at 270 Clark Street, and that's, I think, in the community of Blaine. And I'm here. I was almost tempted to change my message that I was wanting to bring. But you all know, I believe, from my other times here, that I am obsessed with the safety of the young people who are going to be replacing us. And it may not be in too many years, especially me. But I'm going to have to read this because young people are very dear to me. And I may get emotional, and I could cry. But some people think that a man crying is a sign of weakness. I think it's a sign of love and compassion for a group or for a cause.
Do you think you can keep this, hold it to about 3 minutes?
Yes.
I only have a page.
Okay. There's double space.
All right. That's great.
When people fear for their well-being, and even their lives, fear for their lives, that fear can travel in a couple of different directions. One, that fear can turn to anger and hate and evil deeds, which can destroy our country. Or two, that fear can lead to a determination on our part to work together in mutual love and respect for the good of all of us. My 10th grade world history teacher told us over and over again a favorite saying of his: there's enough bad in the best of us and enough good in the worst of us that it behooves all of us not to speak or do evil against the rest of us. That does not say that we should not correct each other when we do wrong. There has been going on for a long time in this country, and it just happened today if you've been watching TV, a demonization of people who disagree with us or are different than us. And it's been used by a lot of our national leaders to their own advantage to do wrong. I have a fear that our political parties are using the fears of the people to lead this country into hell. And that is not a cuss word, it's a destination. We can bury our heads in the mud, saying that we can do nothing. It's the government, federal government's problem. If we who may think of us as good, the good people, can do nothing about what's going on in our country, we are being part of the problem, not part of the solution. We will also travel that road to hell. I would like to see our city government start a series of public conversations in Blaine on how we as individuals and the community can change our feelings and our behaviors. We need to start thinking of the welfare of our neighbor. Who is our neighbor? Well, my definition is anyone that is affected by my beliefs or actions. I heard once said that if we do not stand up for someone else that's being persecuted, a group, that because it's not our problem, because we're not being affected, then we better watch out because we could be next. I would like to see a conversation with the community, and I'd like to see the city be the leader of it, on how we can change our beliefs, because there are beliefs in this town even that are evil, and even from good people. So I leave you with that challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zell. I appreciate those comments. Okay, next on the list here is George McKinney, speaking about the change to ward voting.
Good evening, Council. I'm George McKinney, 5547 Canvasback Road, Blaine, Washington. I have, fortunate or unfortunately, lived in a lot of different cities throughout my 75 years of living. And this is a rather small community, and I have lived in several of those over the years. I don't believe that we need ward voting here, and for a very simple reason. You automatically allow people that are in a more, I'm trying to keep from saying groups, I'll say it, you know, like Simeon or Lincoln or whoever, and they have X number of people they can bring in. You can get changed. Things can get changed too easy, in my opinion. I think it should be open. There's not a, well, we've got 4,000 or 5,000 people. What do we need ward voting for? It leads to, in my opinion, it leads to issues. And so I would ask the council to really consider that not to just automatically go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McKinney. Okay, now we'll go on to our consent agenda, which consists of a voucher memo, which I trust you've read from our city accountant on some of the items on there. And the amount of the bills is $115,916.04. And then we also have approval of the council minutes of May 14th. So I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Moved by Councilor Lawson, seconded by Councilor Hawkins to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passed 6-0. Okay, next we've got a public hearing on Title III, Revenue and Finance Development Impact Fees. So if there's anybody in the audience who would like to speak to this, that's the purpose of this public hearing. We'll have a introduction to what it's all about, and then you'll have an opportunity to make some comments if you wish.
Good evening, Council. So just a quick introduction. I just wanted to cover what impact fees are real quickly. Then we'll go through some highlights of the ordinance that we're proposing this evening. So impact fees, these are paid at the time of building permit issuance. They're one-time charges for development, and they must be used for new or to expand the existing facilities. So they can't be used for maintenance. They have to be spent on projects that are in our capital improvement plan, and then we must spend them in 10 years or refund them, which that hasn't been a problem, though, as we have projects every year to spend funds from. Just real quickly, the Washington Code allows for basically four different types. Transportation, which can be used for streets and roads and potentially trails if there's expanded capacity. Parks, which can also be used for open space and recreational facilities. Those two, we charge both of those today, but there's also allowance in the Washington Code to have fire protection and school facilities. So why are we doing this? Well, Council, when they approve the population projections over in our comprehensive plan, together with Whatcom County Council, allocated a significant population moving to Blaine over 20 years. And our comprehensive plan has levels of service for streets and parks in that plan. And what this really comes down to is more people mean higher demand on those services. And we address that through our capital facilities plan. That's the plan we use to project the projects that we're going to build, typically over a six-year period. So this has been brought to Council a couple of times. We originally came to Council in July of last year. We had a work session in March, and the feedback we received from four of the five Council members that were present at the time was to bring forward a ordinance to update the fees now and work on incentives at a later date. And I just want to say that we really tried to work on incentives. We looked at that tax rebate program. We looked at differential fees by land use type, but we just quite couldn't get there. I think we need to do more analysis. We worked with our legal counsel, and we were at a point where we couldn't bring you a fundamentally sound incentive program at this time. So what we want to do is come back in the future with that proposal. We might need to do a transportation study to justify having incentives for certain land use types, and we needed to figure out whether we're going to do that in-house or potentially put that in the budget request coming up later this year. So Ordinance 182910 does exactly that. It updates the Development Impact Fee Code, and I'm going to run you through the highlights in just a second here. But to go with that, there's Resolution 1730-18. That will actually change the unified fee schedule. And one of the things we've built into both of those is there's about a two-month lag or deferral, if you will. So these would take effect, if the council approved it tonight, August 1st. And so what that would allow is building permits that are in the application review process to be finished up, and they'd pay the current fees today. And if anyone was out there that wanted to submit a single-family building permit in the next couple of weeks, they could still do that and pay the fees that were currently in place today. So the new fees wouldn't come into place until August 1st. So just a couple of highlights. I'd be happy to take you through the full ordinance, and we can look at it piece by piece and talk about why we're recommending certain changes, but I thought I'd just cover a quick overview first. So some of the new important things here is that we have a new transportation impact fee formula, and Raven's going to speak to that in a few minutes. And then we revised the park impact fee formula to really be similar to the transportation impact fee formula. We're going to get into this in a little bit more detail, but we wanted those to be similar methods moving forward. So there's an amendment there. And then we have a new emergency management impact fee that we're proposing. That's there's some information in our comprehensive plan that suggests we should be considering that. I mentioned this before, but the deferral of impact fees, there's a process to do that for single-family homes only. Now, that's a state-mandated requirement. I'll cover that in greater detail. A couple of just other things in the code that we're proposing is there's a new reconsideration request. So what that is when the city says, these are what your impact fees are, the applicant or the owner has an opportunity to come back and say, I would like you to reconsider that before I formally appeal your decision. So there's just a built-in reconsideration process into the code. And then really the ordinance just clarifies and streamlines the code, and really the process that's in there. There's just a lot of little edits and code changes. Sometimes we've referred to that as a code scrub, but just, you know, cleaning it up, essentially. So just real quickly, I wanted to cover this impact fee deferral program. So this is a state-mandated code change. I guess the council could theoretically elect not to approve this, but you'd be out of compliance with state code, so we're definitely not recommending that. But this applies only to single-family development, and what this means is if someone comes in and they want to get a building permit, they don't have to pay their impact fees if they go through this process. Now, it's a complicated process. They have to file a property lien. There's an administrative fee associated with that. And then they record another document, which is a release of that lien at a later date. And then they can only defer up to 18 months. So if it takes 2 years to build your home, after 18 months, you have to pay those impact fees. And there's also a special clause in there that it can only be used 20 times by a single developer. So if someone had a really big subdivision, they can only do it 20 times. Personally, I don't think this is a really great incentive that a lot of people will use or deferral program, but it's a state mandate, and so we've built it into the proposal. So transportation impact fees. Raven can get up here to address that.
So, as Alex indicated, with the transportation impact fee, our goal was to also give it as much flexibility as well as essentially provide opportunities for adjustments relating to the amount of the development that relates to the impact, as opposed to just saying, okay, 100% of that all gets attributed to this development. So I'm going to show that to you here. First, just a recap on our study session. I'm showing where our reserve balances went when we suspended impact fees in 2009, and then when we subsequently reinstituted them at the 2009 level. We're starting to see those creep back up again. But creep is really the end of the game. You can see that for a lot of our projects, the amount that we've used for impact fees was relatively small. But that is also taking into account that the street bond was in effect at this time. So the street bond has since expired. This is now our biggest source of potential funding for capital improvements to our streets. And in fact, the 2017 money that you see there, we actually transferred from the street overlay fund, which is what we use for street, our street overlay fund, which is one piece of that property tax that we still have in public works for street resurfacing and so forth. We moved that over for just street operations. So it's kind of a, it looks like, oh, well, you're able to use $100,000. Well, actually, we're $100,000 short somewhere else, and that's how we made it work. So our proposal, and I'm hoping you remember because I did not re-plot the giant diagram, but in terms of the state, there is a spreadsheet that has been maintained by the city of Bellingham that shows impact fees statewide. And in the entire state of Washington, Blaine is the third lowest impact fee. In fact, has been unchanged since 1999. We have reviewed this with our Public Works Advisory Committee as well as internal staff, and the recommendation is to go with a 1558 from the current 770 and to start ratcheting that up slowly after that to get us back in the ball field of where we should be. So this is, again, I didn't plot the large picture that showed the amazing graph, but to just look at where we are in relationship to the other cities in Whatcom County, and I should add that all of these cities have transportation benefit districts. So this is, it's not one or the other. They're used together to pull together revenue for street improvements. Transportation benefit district comes out of sales tax, which anybody that shops in Blaine pays toward. And then for the traffic impact fees, that is anybody that is developing in the city would pay toward. So also Alex indicated that we have a method of calculation. This is what I was trying to describe when I said that we are trying to create as much in the way of flexibility as possible. And so we're taking into account with the new method, grant and other types of revenue credits, as well as what's called this adjustment factor. And by combining those things, we come up with the new rate for the traffic impact fee. In an example of how that adjustment factor might be used for like the Boblett Street project, which is getting ready to proceed with design, we might say that typical development proposal might have a 30% impact on that street project or on that street, but 70% of that's already existing. These are just sample numbers. So that share of the impact fee wouldn't be for 100% of that improvement. It would only be for 30%. In the case of exit 274, where we know we have a significantly costly project, we would attribute 100% of that to existing need and zero to a prospective development. So we're not having a percentage of that huge cross hit. And I will say that that methodology was used to artificially suppress even that $1,500 request that we're making. If we were to do this in a way that was a little bit more aggressive, we would have a higher expansion or a higher adjustment factor. So with that, I also wanted to just exemplify the need. So this is the project list from the six-year traffic improvement plan, which we'll be coming forward to here very shortly again for approval. These are projects that I would say 90% of which are unfunded at this time, but are very real needs for the city in terms of how we want to grow in order to maintain those levels of service that we, the promise our citizens, would maintain.
Thank you, Raven. I'll now talk about the Park Impact Fee Program. So this is our new formula that we're proposing. It's very similar to the existing formula only that we've added in now that estimated grant credit right in the middle of that top line. And so with that, we're deducting from the total cost of improvements the amount of grants that we anticipate getting. So when you run the numbers, if you add up all the cost of improvements in our six-year park CIP, it's about $1.8 million. And our estimated grant credit that's listed in our CIP is about, it is $25,000. But we haven't estimated grants in the year 2019 or beyond. So those years are all zeroed out in our CIP. And when we come back and propose a new CIP later this year, we can do that. We'll put that in there and have those grants estimated out in future years. And then we figure out the total number of housing units. That's based off our population projection, and we divide that by the number of people per household, and that gives us the number of housing units that we can anticipate over 6 years. So those are the variables that go into the equation there. And then, last but not least, is we have the adjustment factor. So that is a variable that contributes the proportion of cost to either development, which will be paid for in impact fees, versus the general public. And so with this formula, it's about a 21.38% adjustment factor, meaning new development would pay for about 21% of the costs of the projects in the park CIP. So where do we sit in our comparison? Here's a table, and you'll notice there all the other jurisdictions in Whatcom County have two different, or most of the jurisdictions have two different park impact fees, and those are for single family and multifamily development or units. And so Bellingham's at the top of the list at about $4,000 for single family in their multifamily developments, just under $3,000. Ferndale's got a they're the next in line, which brings us to Blaine and Everson. We would be tied with Everson at $1,200 each. Everson does have a slightly lower multifamily rate. And then Linden there is next. Now, that is one thing to point out about Linden is they actually charge park impact fees for commercial development. So if you put in a new commercial development or manufacturing development as well, actually. So they spread their park impact fees over all different types of land use, not just residential. So I would anticipate their fees would be higher if they just focused on residential. And then last but not least, Nooksack and Sumas do not have park impact fees. So that's kind of where we're at. We're pretty much right in the middle if council approved the $1,200 amounts. So moving forward, we have an emergency management impact fee. So this is supported by several statements in our comprehensive plan, public facilities goals 4 and policies 4.1 and 4.2. And the amount is not quite so simple. The amount is based off the fire district's capital improvement plan, just like the city park fee and the city transportation impact fee. And so there's an attachment in your packet, attachment 2, which lists out all the different fees by land use types. And so that's in there. The development that we receive the most of is single family homes. And that fee is just under $1,020 for an unsprinklered single family home. So this slide summarizes a lot of work that was done by the fire district. Mr. Hollander is here this evening. He can answer some questions as well. But when we started talking about this, we wanted to kind of just distill this down. But basically, they had to go through and do an inventory of all their equipment and the facilities and how much that costs. And then they break it down on a per-unit cost, per unit of development, like a building permit. And then they built in an adjustment or a credit, if you will, for tax revenue received and whether the development had fire sprinklers or not. When you look at their mitigation schedule, you'll see there's a column for unsprinklered and a column for sprinklered facilities. So then you take the total cost of all that and you subtract out the credits for sprinkling or tax revenue, and that's how they came up with the concurrency mitigation fee schedule. So a lot of work there, simplified down real shortly, but that's essentially how they came up with that. And just a little bit of history here. So first of all, We already collect those fees for projects that qualify for SEPA. And so big projects that are 20 multifamily units or 10 single-family homes under one project or 30,000 square feet, those projects already have to pay that through the SEPA process, through SEPA mitigation fees. And the city actually adjusted those levels in 2013. We raised them quite significantly. It went from 10 dwelling units, no matter if it was single family or multifamily, all the way up to 20. And then the commercial went from 10 to 30,000. And that had the effect of less projects paying that emergency management SEPA fee because they didn't trigger SEPA. And so that's how that works. So the city adjusted those levels up, less projects qualified for those, and then less projects paid that fee. Under this new proposal, every single building permit that was a new unit would pay those fees. So with that, staff is recommending approval of the ordinance, which makes amendments to Title III and to clarify the process in the code. And we're also recommending approval of Resolution 1730-18, which updates the unified fee schedule. And with that, staff would be happy to answer any questions maybe after we hear from the public.
Okay, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this or even have a question about part of what we've heard? Mr. Freeman, please state your name and address for the record, please.
Thank you. I didn't show up today because of the public hearing. This is a challenge. I think what Alex has done is, you know, a great job of trying to figure out, because these things have to be paid for at some point. But what I see is this continual creep in fees, and from a development standpoint, it almost becomes a penalty fee to do business in a community. So as you look at just not a little bit here and a little bit there and a little more over here, but overall it becomes quite a bit of money. And I know from experience in dealing with a lot of clients that don't do a project or bail out through a feasibility period is because the fees become too large. And so this is a puzzle that's going to be difficult to put together. But a lot of these properties that would be penalized to move forward and to be developed have, from the beginning of time, paid in to the fire department, the police department, the parks department by virtue of their annual real estate tax that they've paid. It's almost like they've already bought a chair to the party. And I don't know how you're going to fix this, because I know this is something, these parks need to be built, the fire department needs to be funded, and all these things need to happen, but I just kind of caution you in that as we take a little bit here and a little bit there, all of a sudden it becomes a whole lot, and as a penalty to a developer, a lot of projects just don't happen. I don't know what the answer is, but I just want you to consider that as well.
Thanks for your comments. Anyone else like to speak to this? Do you have any questions? Okay. I will close the public hearing then on the matter. And this is under council action items. We'll see what council wants to do with it, whether to approve this evening or extend the public hearing. So for this evening, I guess I closed the public hearing, didn't I?
Closed the public hearing, yeah.
I did close the public hearing. Okay, well, we will deliberate about this when we have our discussions and see if we want to modify it at all. Okay, next item is we intend to go into an executive session about purchase and sale of real property, but I'd like to ask for a presentation to be made to make the public aware of what this offer is all about, and before we go into executive session to discuss financial matters.
Madam Mayor, Council, the item that is the potential sale of real estate is for some of the gateway or airport property. So it's the northern portion of the site, approximately six and a half acres or so. And Mr. Freeman, who you just heard from, is here to present that offer. And the city's real estate agent, Mike Kent, is here to answer questions related to that as well before we go into executive session. I would remind you when we're when you were out and you're considering it and asking questions here, it's good to have as much of the conversation out in the public, because the law requires that you can only discuss matters related to price and actual pricing in the executive session.
Okay, Mr. Kent, you can give us some info on this.
Thank you. To give you a little background, so you know how this came about, I was contacted by the party who prepared the purchase and sale agreement with Ron. In the discussions, it was evident very early on that they had serious interest, and I almost immediately referred this buyer to Ron so that I could fully represent the city and he could fully represent the buyer. This property is pretty unique. My fiduciary is important in all matters, but I think in this particular case, even more so. And as you see the offer and whatnot, or hear more about it, you'll probably understand the emphasis on that. So I just wanted, by introduction to Ron, Ron's representing the buyer as I turn to him so he could represent him.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. It's fun to be here again doing this. The offer itself, the written offer, has gone to you, and I know you're going to be discussing the details of the offer and the terms of it, but just in general, it's very much the same format that we looked at for the last parcel that was being put under contract on the south side of the airport property. I think more important to you is not that you have an offer to sell the property, but what is this buyer going to do? What is the city going to see happen there? And of course, the price ultimately is also important. So I've asked the buyer to give us just a quick outline of who they are and what they intend to do with the property. So this is a group. The name is Upple Investments. It's a family-owned group. They were established about 20 years ago. They specialize in management and execution of business development projects. I've had them give me a short list of some other projects that they've done, and I'll just kind of run through them with you. I can leave the handout with Mike so that he can go in more detail with you. But they've done quite a few things. They have right now a mixed-use project going in Federal Way. They're putting up a 54-unit market-rate apartment building with 5,000 square feet of retail space. The completion of that project is going to be sometime in 2019. A lot of what they do is fuel and retail-oriented businesses. They have a gas station in Lakewood, Washington. They have a truck mechanic repair shop in Kent, Washington. They have several residential projects, development projects they're doing in Vancouver, B.C. Part of the family ownership is in Canada. They also have done, they own a Greenhouse Inn Suites in Yakima, Washington. So that would be acquired in the year 2000. And they also have the BN Trucking Center in Kent, Washington. So specific to this site, their comments to me, I'll read them to you. It says, with the potential 6 acres of property, we plan on this development benefiting both U.S. and Canadian traffic. In addition to a truck and fuel stop, we plan on partnering with a coffee chain, a fast food restaurant to attract customers crossing the border, as well as residents in Blaine. And furthermore, we plan on constructing a 20,000 square foot grocery store. So by comparison, when we did the Cost Cutters shop here in Blaine, that's about 40,000 square feet. I think some of the Trader Joe's stores are in that 20, 24,000 square foot range. This is not going to be Trader Joe's, but they look at catering to customers that similar to what Trader Joe's would do, except with a very strong bent on what Canadians are doing. The project has to be profitable. We're looking at Canadians coming down to buy fuel, to buy eggs, milk, butter, other things oriented like that. And a lot of the products that you'd see at something like a Trader Joe's that would attract a Canadian clientele would come down and hopefully stop here instead of going to Bellingham. Their projections in their initial analysis would be that this project would employ about 45 people full-time once completed. They'd be looking at the restaurant itself, fast food restaurant, employing about 10 people. The coffee shop, about 8. The grocery building, about 20. They'd have a 24/7 security guards there that would be 3. And a mechanic shop that would employ 4. They looked at projected revenue, somewhere around $25, $26 million, of which fuel revenue for just gasoline, about $8.4 million. Diesel fuel, about $15 million. The grocery building would be, they're estimating about $20,000 a month. Coffee shop, fast food, mechanic shop, those revenues are not being projected. That would all be in addition to what they're doing. So the target of this property was kind of a bit ambiguous. They're hoping to buy the full 9.25 acre site, but Yorkston has made a deal with you to buy the Boblett side. So they're looking at buying the remainder, everything north of the Yorkston property up to the border. The city's consideration here, I know if there's any acceptance, it's going to be contingent upon the finalization of the Yorkston lot line adjustment, because this would include that portion that Yorkston would be deeding to the city. That particular portion of the property does have restrictions on it, unless I'm wrong. I think that's the only portion that deals with restrictions for future fuel sales. And with that, the structure is very similar to the Ivan transaction. It's a 90-day feasibility. If there's the likelihood that you'd like us to proceed with this offer, they would be meeting this week with engineers to develop a site concept so that we can get something else in front of you that looks a little more concrete of, you know, what's it really going to be? What's it going to look like? How does it flow? They've already made arrangements with an engineer to meet tomorrow if there is potential for this offer to be accepted. I know Mike is going to answer his questions for you, but if there's any questions or concerns that you'd have for me, I'd be open to hearing from them or hearing, okay, hearing from you.
Does anybody want to ask any questions of Mr. Freeman? Yes, Mr. Davidson.
I just want to clarify, did you say $20,000 a month that the grocery store was planning on bringing in? Is that the number?
No, if I said that, I made a big mistake.
Okay, because that's like $700 a day. So
that's not very much.
No.
$200,000.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So
that was my
Yeah. Thanks for
mentioning that. And the reason I'm mentioning the revenue, because, you know, thinking about what, how does this benefit the city? And, you know, there's the tax revenue is, of course, big for what the, what might benefit the city. And knowing what the project will look like, I think, is going to be ultimately important to you. Okay?
Okay. Thanks for that information.
Thank you.
Nobody else, staff, doesn't want to make any comments about or questions? If not, we will go into executive session to discuss the price, and I expect we'll be maybe, what, 20, 30 minutes? At least 20, possibly 30 minutes. Yeah. Okay. We'll say 30 and maybe be back a little early. So you're all welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting.